Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Monday stream.
It is, yes.
I thought tomorrow was Wednesday, Thursday, so I thought it was Wednesday. I'm so mixed up. We are not late, by the way. OBS just decided to randomly stop broadcasting for some reason.
Yeah, so we are, once again, not late, because we are always on time.
We are always on time. Actually, I just had to sit here and be slightly frustrated waiting for the YouTube backend to catch up, which is kind of annoying.
I suppose at the start of the stream, we should do the usual round of the shillings. And we are very thankful to have people who do support our stuff, whether they are members on the YouTube channel, people who subscribe up to the Substack and either give a gift or a $5 a month subscription on there, or through the super chats or the super stickers, or preferably, in terms of most people, I believe, would be using the Ko-fi link thing, which allows you to donate by all sorts of different platforms. So that's very useful. It means you don't have to be reliant on PayPal or Entropy, and also it doesn't get taxed in the same way that stuff from YouTube or Substack does, because Stripe just decides to take 30% because you're not American.
A lot of people are being like, even the titles have black pills in them now. But it's, the problem is, it's true. That's the framing we're going for. Yes, digital ID is already here. I'm afraid we are the describers of reality, but I see quite a
that might just be like the tagline from now on in future. Describers of reality.
I'm afraid that that's what we are in somewhat reduced to in some ways. Yeah. We are the observer.
When they come with a box car, I'm just going to be like, no, I'm nothing but a humble describer of reality.
Yeah, I'm a sovereign streamer. I'm merely describing reality.
But there is also, as well, if you want more of our very gripping descriptions of reality, a plethora of things we're trying to put up on the Substack. I've written up a few of these sort of mantras for surviving. I went a bit West Country there.
Surviving
modernity. So there'll be one of those up hopefully basically every Thursday for quite a considerable while.
So I'm actually looking that there may end up being Friday content at this rate. If I get one of my if I get enough of my Substack pieces finished to have a cushion of them, there might end up being, so you might be able to get us 5 days a week, which is an interesting one, because there will be an upload tomorrow. I've been uploading videos on Tuesday. There'll be an adaptation of the first article that you wrote for the Substack, which is the manufacturing consent one, which is kind of the basis of a lot of the things we talk about.
Yes.
So it's a bit late for it going up as a video. But
alongside that, I've been sort of talking to, or at least I talked to one venue, I need to check back with them, about what we're doing for our next Nomos stuff. I suppose in the meantime, because we know these two facts are for definite, that it will be the last weekend in October this year.
Yes.
And it will be in Stirling for those who either live further up north and would like us to come towards them, or would like to join us into a trip into one of the sort of bits of Scotland that's not too hard to get to but still looks quite nice. And I'm sure if we put plans together for it during that weekend, we might be able to do stuff like maybe a tour of the castle if people want to chip in for something like that. Meantime, there is also the Wetan happening again August 25th to 27th. They're having their whole thing against Entropy this year, and tickets are available on their website. And I also believe for the next week or so, people can still put in pitches and submissions for talks, but it better not be better than mine.
Yes.
Other than that, I think I've covered everything there.
I believe so.
I want to preface this stream with not so much a, ooh, we told you so, but we have really, for the last 2 years, sort of assumed that things like digital ID, UBI, and other elements of sort of technocracy that would have been conspiracy theory, quote-unquote, in the past, are not just coming, but pretty much already here.
Yes.
And that especially when you're looking at something like the Attributes Network that the UK government put up, I think as early as almost late 2019, early 2020, we have talked about that many a time. I've put it in even Substack articles, I think, which if you're going to go through them in sort of chronological order, which will come up again soon. Now, it's something that we've pointed out in multiple streams. We've sort of basically suggested that, like, look, here's this thing that essentially sounds like 99% of a framework for digital ID. Because it's been slightly obscure and slightly esoteric, it seems that almost nobody's picked up on that. However, the government themselves have now just decided that actually the Attributes Network is the framework we're going to use for digital ID.
There's a lot of... It reminds me of the demobilization stuff we talked about, in that this will be slightly more complex because this is a lot of interlocking policy. There's a large amount of moving parts, but I think the easiest place to start... I do see a lot of returning members today, though. Thank you, Anthony Keane. Thank you, John Morton. Thank you, Not Sure. And thank you, S. Smith, for being members. We have quite a few members at the moment, and that really is the bulk of our monthly revenue. Along with the kind of super chats on YouTube, at least. So thank you guys for remaining involved in that. But I will continue on here because we have quite a lot to cover here. We've, like you mentioned, we've covered a few aspects of this in our previous streams, most notably the attributes framework. But the process is moving very fast, and this hasn't really been covered in a dedicated way, no. I'd say, by anyone. There's very little. It's very hard to come across full coverage online, even. Even people who are praising it haven't covered it very well fully. We've come to before that there is a digital ID-shaped hole in the flagship legislation of the entire UK government. It's not just like the online safety bill that we talked about before, but it's to do with everything.
Yes.
Everything that is being passed at the moment has, one, a regulatory alignment with the EU in some way or another, and two, is predicated on the idea that there will be some form of digital ID to access all government services.
Yes.
And it's been obvious, really, and we'll talk about this as we go on, since the Digital Economy Act. We talked about this during our online safety bill stream, which a lot of you, I believe, have watched. That was quite a popular stream. But there's quite a lot of history to get into here as well, because this is a great example that the elites have these projects, and no matter how unpopular the project is, it will eventually come to fruition,
yep,
because it is tried in different ways through different vectors, and the advantage they have over us is time. They are the ones at the moment with the permanence.
And so let's go all the way back to the glory days, June 2005.
Yes.
From The Independent, Blair defends ID cards after plan is dismissed as dog's dinner. If we scroll down a little bit here. Tony Blair faced a dual assault on the government's proposal for ID cards yesterday, with leading academics and official information watchdog condemning plans for a national identity covering every individual in Britain. You know, they're talking here about 300-page report by staff at the London School of Economics made fundamental criticisms of the justification, technology, and scope of the ID card scheme. The report warned it could pose a far greater risk to safety and security of UK citizens than any of the problems it is intended to address. In the second blow to the proposals, Richard Thomas, the Information Commissioner, also strongly attacked plans for a national identity register as unwarranted and intrusive. Now, I believe they do mention somewhere in this article that this has essentially been, you know, one of Blair's main sort of pillars of, like, the technocratic ideals he's put across since at least 2002, if not prior to. And it all becomes a little bit funnier because, of course, Blair was elected on a platform in 1997 that was opposed to John Major's national identity scheme.
Yeah, we'll go over that. But one of the things I noticed is that identity cards are only ever proposed by regimes that are already unpopular. The plans for it started in 2005, but really by 2005 to 2007, the Blair government was already limping at that stage. And we are kind of a couple of years away from that period we talk about, which is 2007 to 2010, when basically Gordon Brown comes in and passes all of the laws that Blair didn't have time to pass in a very hurried and very frenzied fashion.
And then for absolutely no reason whatsoever, David Cameron and all these mates at these think tanks came along in 2009, 2010, when Blairism should have died a Brownian death, and decided to keep it all going.
Yeah,
but that's a story for a different day.
That is a story for a different day, but also hello, Mr. Carpet Merchant.
What I find interesting, though, is that here's this article from 2005, right. The London School of Economics are like, no, it's a terrible idea. Yeah.
LSE researchers said plans for ID cards and passports containing fingerprints or facial scans were unsafe in law because they may infringe human rights and the ancient law to enter and leave the country.
Sorry,
freely.
What ancient law is that fucking one? But then
I think they're actually just referencing common law there.
Possibly. But then we go to this year, in March, biometricupdate.com, digital identity interest group forms with initial meeting at the London School of Economics.
So with it's very who must go.
Yeah, exactly. Your digital ID and Tony Blair must go. And then, you know, all of a sudden the London School of Economics is doing his dirty work.
So 18 years later, the entire project has reversed and the London School of Economics is now fully on board with a scheme that it said was unsafe in law.
Yeah. But experts on digital identity and intersecting disciplines gathered at the London School of Economics and Political Science this week initially to discuss the topic when the state builds digital identity, not will,
yeah.
When
the state
experiences from India, Kenya and beyond as a means to determine interest in establishing an interest group and future meetings. Which is something we'll have to keep an eye on because if like the London School of Economics actually comes up with its own digital identity vertical after only 18 years ago saying it's an unworkable idea, that's almost too perfect.
It's very funny, but it just shows how the shifting ground has basically absorbed anybody.
Yeah. I mean, people can go and have a look at this link and look at more of stuff if they want, but it's very clear that this isn't a, you know, forum sort of discussion on it as a debate about the efficacy of national ID or digital ID. It's a discussion on how do we make these systems we've applied in the third world countries work here.
Well, as you may or may not know, I forgot to open this link, but there it is. The ID cards were actually the law of the land from 2006.
Yes.
Quite slyly, the Blair government passed a law that made not only ID cards mandatory, but a national identity register law. And they started implementing it.
Mm.
But some of you who were around at the time may remember that it is one of the few incidences of genuine popular disruption, along with things like the poll tax riots. There weren't riots, but there was a huge amount of popular pushback to the point that it was very clear that the implementation of the project would create a large amount of possible civil strife. It was actually a project that was later abandoned. It was used as a political fodder by David Cameron's government. And they used it as kind of a jumping off point to pass a repealing bill, which meant that the ID cards would not take place. But in doing this, they kind of painted themselves into somewhat of a corner.
Well, I think they also replaced it with a different piece of legislation that pretty much asked for the same thing, but not a physical card.
Kind, yes.
And what they said they were going to do was scrap all the information at the National Identity Register. But of course, they weren't going to go to every single individual branch of government that's used National Identity Register information and ask them to scrub it.
It really is a fact that they've spent the last 13 years preparing the groundwork for digital ID.
Yes.
It's a great example of performatively putting something back in the bottle so that it can be worked on and workshopped in secret. Really what the Tory government did is performatively put ID cards back in the bottle for later use.
Yes.
They were very, very much engaged in a project here of fake dispelling.
Mm.
This is not something that legitimately went away. It is something that stayed in the background and is only really bearing fruit now, but it's taken so long, partially to their own incompetence, as we'll cover. But ID cards have been tried before, and they were so unpopular, they had to not remove them, but delay them. A lot of you who are slightly older will remember the No to ID campaign, which was actually huge, far bigger than any climate campaign has ever been. But anyway, that's kind of a bit of a history point there, that this has been a very long-running project, and it seems to be a very long-running project from people who are already unpopular.
Well, yeah, because there seems to be characters like William Hague, who already seems to be committing some sort of like character and narrative-based suicide with some of the immigration stuff he's been saying recently. Yeah. But here he is with Tony Blair. Everyone has to have digital ID cards. And then if we, it's just the little interview with Tony Blair at the bottom of this article. I just want to read out on its own.
This little bit here?
A little bit further down.
Yeah.
Yeah. He added, here's our problem. We're spending a lot. We're heavily taxed and the outcomes are poor. So the question is, what changes that situation? So if you take, for example, the ambitions we have on climate, there is no way we can meet that ambition without changing planning. There's literally no way we can do it. And a lot of these things, they're not airy-fairy, they're actually about people's lives. People already live their lives digitally. The question is whether government and politics can catch up with that reality.
Yes, it's the framing here.
Yeah, digital ID is already here. You know, it's beyond politics, it's beyond debate. If we're going to be the competent government that we hold ourselves up to be, then we must move with the times and adopt or at least hand out some sort of framework by which a digital identity program or system could be developed.
Well, compulsory digital ID and quote-unquote ID cards have already been resurrected as an immigration-fighting policy by the Labour government. It is still policy. It's Stephen Kinnock. We talked about this on the basis of our political switcheroo stream 8 months ago.
Yes, because of course the Conservative government, or at least some of the local devolved governments as well, have all decided to back some kind of UBI scheme. Now, what way do you make sure that people have, or that UBI has gone to the right person and track maybe what even they've spent it on? The best thing, of course, would be some form of digital way to prove who you are, and through that you could access your UBI.
Well, as we talked about during both the performative failure stream and the, you know, the UBI stream, that making a system that has a UBI shaped hole in it is the way to get people to ask for UBI. Just like creating a system with a digital ID card shaped hole in it is a way to get people to ask for digital IDs. What we will see here over the next hour or so is the Conservative government deliberately making a mess and creating an overly complex system based around not technically having a database and not technically having an ID card, but having the function of both. And they are going 99% of the way there towards this. And they will allow, when they are cycled in the Labour government, to go the extra 1% and refine this scheme we're about to show you into a full-blown national database and digital ID, as was proposed all the way back in 2005. It'll take a decade, but Blair's policy that was massively revolted against by the British populace in a very rare display of that kind of action will come into force, because as we all know, populism is a delusion.
Indeed it is.
But anyway, another aspect to this before we launch into it is the fact that there is already, within the UK, digital government service that have crept up in the public sector in every area. The great leap forward in this digital ID and digital services market were the lockdowns. But a lot of this was also put in place to remain in alignment with the EU. The EU was already implementing these systems, and us, as part of the EU, had to in some way follow suit, or at least make them interoperable. And we don't have time to go over it. In this stream, we'll just be covering the UK. But there are extremely similar schemes in Europe that I would say are about 5 years ahead of where we are.
Mm.
In fact, I would say they were exactly 5 years ahead of where we are, because the schemes in the EU started in 2014.
Yeah, scroll down a sec.
Yeah.
Digital identity in the EU. The European Union has long been ahead of the curve when it comes to digital identity. The EIDAS regulation of 2014 laid down the framework for the use of electronic identification and trust services across member states, with a focus on increasing user convenience, security and privacy. The EU is now taking things even further with the introduction of EIDAS 2.0, which will make it possible to create a secure digital identity wallet and a mobile app known as the European Digital Identity Wallet. This digital identity wallet app will store all of the user's online authentication credentials and can be used to access services across Europe.
So if you are, say, somebody who's come on a boat from somewhere, what can happen is that the EU directly can grant you a digital identity.
Well, this could potentially create an environment where digital identities are interoperable across multiple jurisdictions,
yes,
allowing for easier access to services both within the EU and beyond its borders. Now, there's obviously a massive discussion here about global mobilization of peoples, globalization in general, you know, like the vertical integration of sort of data and government managerial services essentially worldwide.
Yeah.
However, for the moment, because that's something that we'll have to sort of contend with in time, because I don't think people fully understand either way how this stuff's going to fully sort of shake out, as it were.
I don't think even they do.
No. So for the continuing element of this stream, we will focus on the specific UK government attributes network and things like the Verify program that's referred to just in the paragraph there.
The reason I'm going to mention this is that the EIDAS stuff we will probably cover in a future stream, because there is a large amount of interoperability stuff that the UK is already planning. And there are bits in this stream we'll have to return to at some point, but it would end up being a 4-hour stream if it were to do all of it. So we'll be zooming in really on UK-specific digital ID legislation. The place to start, really, is the initial consultation in 2019. What we have here is it's a proposal to officiate and officialize the patchwork that began in really with the first online services from the government. But this process of making it more official and central began in July 2019, or at least on paper it did, with a public call for evidence, the first of many. The initial push was bundled with a push for digital inclusion and access to services. It meant
people who are disabled can access their universal credit and not have themselves be sanctioned of hundreds of pounds every week because they can't get to the job centre. And it's now at a point whereby no one can get universal credit because the system's crap and it's all online.
Well, I'm not going to read all of this. They call for evidence. They basically just say, everyone said it was a good idea when we asked them and we're going to do it.
Yeah, can we just move on to the two paragraphs there?
Yeah.
In your responses to last year's digital identity call for evidence, you told us, this is the public, I presume, wanted the government to take a lead role in developing the UK's digital identity economy. You wanted to see us create a clear framework that enables businesses to innovate. You want us to enable individuals to access the products and services they want with ease, confident that they are protected from fraud and that robust privacy protections are in place. To this end, we will develop proposals for a legal framework to remove regulatory barriers which prevent the use of secure digital identities and establish safeguards for citizens. We will also develop the next generation of digital identity use in government and promote a pragmatic approach to international digital identity standards. One line I find interesting there. Remove regulatory barriers which prevent the use of secure digital identities. Is that the government slyly admitting there that if someone else, without the government's impetus, were to develop a digital identity framework, that they would ban it and essentially tell them to chase themselves? Because if anyone's going to be making this, it's got to be on their behest and under their control.
Well, it is. That's what's happened up until now. A lot of people have been jumping the gun and chomping at the bit. In fact, that's what happened partially with the vaccine passports, in that a lot of people went, shh, it's not time yet. There was a lot of stuff with that. There was a lot of written responses, blah, blah, blah. But we'll find out what they're actually saying here is not true. A lot of the responses they got to this consultation and future consultations were actually people telling them to shove it.
Yep.
And a lot of them explicitly telling them, this is a workaround to bring about ID cards. We protested this 10 years ago. What are you doing?
But there's some other sleight of hands here as well, because what they're not seeing, at least in that bit, is that, you know, we're not coming up with a digital identity framework. We are leading the economy where people will develop this stuff. Well, you know, the government is not making digital identities mandatory. This is not a step towards ID cards. And that's something, that was a line they pretty much kept with right up until really about last year.
Yeah.
When at some point, as we're covering some of the links we've gone over, they just decided one day that actually, no, the attributes framework is what digital identity will become.
Well, there's two factors here. No, it will not technically be mandatory. And all of this throughout the consultation, throughout all the proposals, is predicated on the idea of, oh, there must be alternate services for old people and disabled people. But as any of you know, you cannot access physical services in the UK. Have you tried to get a doctor's appointment recently? And that's one of the quickest ones. You will wait 10 weeks generally for an appointment with any other kind of government. But the issue here is that, yes, technically there will still be in-person ID checks available, but they will be time-wise unfeasible. It will be months you'll be waiting, as is standard now, and it will only get worse as these things progress. The alternative will be there on paper, but it will not exist in reality, as much of government doesn't exist in reality anymore in terms of face-to-face services. Anyone who lives in Britain knows this. They know that physical face-to-face services in Britain do not exist. You can't
even decline doesn't even begin to describe it, really, because they just aren't there anymore.
You can't even get hold of people on the phone.
Yes.
It is insane.
I mean, that was something I discovered whilst trying to apply for Universal Credit, is that even if your citizen's advice does not exist anymore as a service you can call, it doesn't have an office you can go in to visit. If you try and go into the job centre nearby where you live, you'll basically be told to chase yourself because you're breaking COVID rules, because you're not supposed to be in the building, because you've not got an appointment with anyone. You cannot get anyone physically on the phone. There isn't even like a really decent like email, text chat kind of feedback thing you'd at least get in like some sort of shopping websites or something.
You can't.
There is nothing.
Yeah, you can't get direct numbers for certain departments and hospitals anymore.
No.
You have to ring the switchboard.
Yes.
You can't just ring people.
And if you're clever enough to note the numbers down for stuff like that, because I've done this a few times when calling for certain medical things, they get very annoyed at you and like to ask where you got that phone number from. It's quite funny.
But yeah, the reason this had to be made, though, and the reason they have kind of softly worded this in this way, and how, you know, very clearly worded it here, because that's very sly, we'll see that, not a step towards ID cards, which is true. It's that you're not going to be issued a physical ID card, but that's the linguistic trick here. It will not be an ID card. It will function as an ID card, and it will function as an ID database, as we'll show going forward. But one, it will not be technically mandatory, and two, it will not be an ID card. And anyone saying mandatory ID cards is falling into a rhetorical trap, because they are not accurately describing reality. Digital ID as a system has evolved beyond what we think of as ID cards. But it's just funny here, this is from the Global Government Forum, and the UK response to digital ID misconceptions after public consultation. This is from this year, actually, but this has apparently been going on throughout this entire process. UK government has pushed a myth-busting article over its plans to develop digital identity verification for online services, which it said were severe misconceptions about the programme. The Cabinet Office produced the fact page after it said the consultation draft legislation to support digital identity verification appeared to have significantly influenced commentaries against implementing compulsory citizen digital identity on principle and the data sharing to support it, which basically means they were told to go chase themselves.
Yeah. In a response to the consultation published on the 23rd of May, the government said the proposed legislation was intended to enable more effective online identity verification when accessing government services by allowing checks against a broader range of trusted data held by relevant public bodies. The move will support the government's One Logon digital ID platform. There's almost to a certain extent so much confusion here that even sites like this, which are meant to talk about it, you know, positively and not make it sound worse than it is, are calling One Logon a digital identity platform.
Yes.
And the government themselves have said, no, it's not that. It's just it's a platform that you access and someone else will hand the identity part of it.
It's a joined up portal to make accessing services easier. It's not a digital ID. But digital ID developments have been subject to online misinformation that will lead the government to surveillance of citizens. But the UK government said that the proposed legislation does not allow the government to engage in data sharing for any purpose other than identity verification when accessing government services. That's also a lie. Yeah, I mean, but however, the consultation response said, I missed that paragraph, sorry, much of the feedback to the consultation focused on tangential themes around digital ID, that many of the responses were driven by anti-digital commentaries without engaging with the specific question. It's basically just them asking, how would you like to be shot? And people saying, oh, we don't actually want to be shot. And them going, you're not answering the questions.
Yeah. Look further down as well there. The government invited views about how an amendment to the UK's 2017 Digital Economy Act would make safe data sharing across public sector bodies easier to support the government's One Login Digital ID platform. So there's already slight admission that all the way back in 2017, there were the tendrils of policy required to sort of put this idea out there. The Cabinet Office stressed it would be incorrect to interpret the proposed law changes, meaning digital ID would be compulsory, underscoring the point it added, there are no plans to introduce mandatory digital identity.
Well, if you need digital ID to access the services, it is de facto mandatory. That's the whole thing.
You can tell they're really not going to do it by how much they're telling us they're not going
to
do it.
Yeah. If the government insists it's not going to do something, they're going to do it. But anyway, that's just, I just thought it was funny that they just got swamped with people saying no ID cards. And they go, no, it's not that. No, it's not that. It looks like an ID card. It functions like an ID card, but we assure you it's not an ID card.
We promise.
And of course, all of this was predicated on the fact that Policy Exchange asked the government in late 2020 to publish a digital ID strategy. Since digital ID is already here, in quotes, they have to have a strategy for it. The lack of reliable digital ID service in the UK is limiting the country's digital infrastructure potential, according to a report on digital identity, which also recommends the government to clarify the future of .gov verify, which is the previous kind of slightly joined up system. We'll go over some of the intricacies of what .gov verify and the one login service is, because they really are the capstone of turning this into a joined up digital ID system with a database, as they said they would never do.
And we shan't bore you with every single detail from the report, because that's something we've done to death a little bit. But there's an interesting portion if we scroll up a little bit.
Yes, it's if you want the real juicy stuff, it's kind of between page 40 and 45.
Just the one, the bold line at the bottom there. Yeah. The UK government has a long-term commitment not to introduce biometric identity cards.
Yeah.
But due to political controversy,
the
coalition government of 2010 eschewed the introduction of a centralised identity database, so long as the government is committed to enabling a digital identity system fit for the UK's growing digital economy without the need for identity cards. So you'll have the same system.
It will need to take a different approach to countries like Estonia, who it references, sorry.
But I just thought that line was so blatant. They're like, there'll be no cards, but there'll still be digital and national identity frameworks.
Nonetheless.
Which is the issue.
Biometric residence permits are still issued to non-EEA nationals who apply to come to the UK for longer than 6 months. So there are already biometric identity cards. They're just being trialled with, again, the immigration system, which is the big kind of crowbar here. But if you want to understand the we're not touching you approach that the UK government is taking as the digital ID.
I said, is that one of the bits as well you want to pick
it up? Oh, it's on page 46, yes. Yeah. HMRC's government gateway service was supposed to be replaced by .gov UK Verify. I believe that's... nonetheless, .gov Verify did not develop the capacity to delegate authority for others to act as intermediaries, making it extremely difficult for it to be used for the purpose of paying tax. This meant, for example, that accountants couldn't file their clients' tax returns. Basically, they're saying that .gov Verify tried to farm out the work to third parties, but struggled to do it. Therefore, at the end of page 46 here, sorry, the design of .gov Verify was guided by the government's decision to repeal the Identity Cards Act on the 21st January 2011 to avoid establishing a central government database or citizen registry. .gov UK Verify was designed with a federated architecture in which the task of verifying identities was outsourced to a set of private companies. This should start worrying you. Each of which had to go through rigorous checks to make sure they could be trusted to keep identity safe. Crucially, the use of private companies meant that the government could receive identity assurance without the need for ID cards, end quote. This is why the attribute framework had to be created. But in doing it in this roundabout way, it's actually just worse than them establishing a database themselves and having ID cards. In saying no, they've actually punished us harder because this allows them to leverage the existing data the private sector has. I will not insult your intelligence by having to go through in detail how this means they can data harvest from the private sector. It is extremely obvious that this is what this is meant for. It is also extremely obvious that they have the ability to do it and that they are willing to do it. But we have yet to see kind of the ramifications of this appear in reality yet, but it is something that they can do and they will do because they have access to it. But what they're doing is they are creating, through this framework, a system where they have a database in pieces that is farmed out the private sector. It is a workaround, and it is a workaround that is expensive, complicated, and I think will eventually be dispensed with in favor of a more efficient database.
Are you trying to tell me that you don't trust the tech bros to put together decentralized cryptographic blockchain network of digital IDs that are totally private, man?
I'm saying it's probably going to be another instance of performative failure, but we'll get onto the framework now, because this is the framework. This is initially what piqued our interest, and we've been going around for about 2 years trying to get people to read this. And a lot of people have read this and gone, what is this gobbledygook? Or they've gone, well, they're just doing a regulatory framework. The way this was first proposed in terms of legislation, in terms of UK law, was around the idea of regulating digital ID providers that already exist in the private sector. They are predicating this on the fact that the government needs to step in and stop these people overstepping. Mm. It's quite a clever framing, really. But what they've done here is they have, we're not going to read the entire Policy Exchange report, because the Policy Exchange report is literally just describing what the government already wants.
Yes.
As we talked about ad infinitum, that's what Policy Exchange is there to do. It's there to pretend to propose policy, but all it is doing is telling the government to do what they are already doing. And then the government can point to Policy Exchange and can go, the think tank told us to do this, therefore it must be a good idea. We promised we didn't want to do it on our own first. Look over there. So this is the one we originally found. This is the 0.1 alpha with a ministerial foreword from Matt Warham, MP for Minister in Digital Infrastructure. And he basically goes on to talk about, oh, the government is committed to solving these problems digitally without the need for national identity cards. They basically just keep insisting that there will be no ID cards. But the faces have changed here because the ministerial foreword in the new version is now by somebody else, although it doesn't caption her. I believe this is someone we'll talk about a bit later. But this is the framework. This is the UK Digital Identity and Attributes Trust Framework, the beta version. There is a large amount of waffle in here.
But look, right there, point six, what the UK Digital Identity and Attributes Trust Framework does.
Yeah.
Up until, as far as I can tell, a year ago, the idea that attributes and digital identity existed together was something that they didn't address whatsoever.
No,
there was an identity and attributes framework, but it was never expressly put forward as a catch-all, one-fits-all digital identity sort of software thing. The idea that that was going to be produced from this, as much as it was obvious and it's what we talked about, was not put forward there.
Well, the way they're distributing this is, they have a central database that they use for government services. They do. They just have one. It's not official, but they kind of just do. Mm. They have to. Otherwise, none of it would work. It's a joke. It's a wink. It's a nod. They say it doesn't exist, but it does in all these different forms. But what they've done, And why you will be confused by this, is they have created all these .gov and government services. They don't have a database to check you against. And they can't do, because that was performatively put away in about 2010. So what they've done is they've created a distributed database, like I said, with private sector people, and that is what the Digital Identity Attributes Framework is for. It is actually a set of British standards and government standards that means that the government can, at any time, turn basically any private business in Britain, if they apply to do it, into a government database.
Well, also in a roundabout fashion, This is also why, if you're looking at certain pages of UK government legislation, they're all stored on Amazon servers.
Yes.
Now, if people really want to get the gears and wheels turning, just think about that. The fact that our government is using Amazon Web Services to operate all their information and data stuff, or at least a good chunk of it. That's who they're working with hand in glove.
Well, there's quite a lot of stuff on here, but let me quickly get through.
We're
a bit further through than this. But all of this really is predicated on the idea that people want it.
Yes, the consultations, the reports, the research, the polling, you know, during the alpha phase, we have assessed how trust framework rules compare to frameworks being developed in other countries. We will continue working with international partners to better understand how to achieve the ambition of international interoperability in a way which best aligns with UK democratic values and principles.
So basically what they're saying is that, look, we're developing a digital ID system. It will be needed to access services. It will be international. There will eventually be a global digital ID. Oh, by the way, that's conspiracy theory. It's just the language here is extraordinary because they're saying it and then saying it's not that. And then, yeah, right, they're just laughing at us, really. But there's two points we're going to cover here. The first of which we'll be covering later on, which is here, which is the digital right to work, rent, and criminal records checks, which is part of how this framework has already been implemented and why this stream is called Digital ID is Already Here.
Yes.
Because it is. Because this has already come into force.
But we'll get there.
But I forgot to thank Melon for the $2 there, saying here for the black pills. Thank you. There won't be plenty of them. We're really just describing the state of digital ID in the UK currently. The first thing we need to talk about, though, is this has been predicated on research on public perceptions of digital identities and attributes. Now, if you actually click this link, and I will click this link here. I pressed accept so it doesn't do it, but the link tends to hang quite badly.
You get one of those Cloudflare things says this website can't be trusted because the SSL certificate no longer exists. Because it's not called Britain Thinks anymore. It's called Thinks Insight
reason. It looks like a link jack.
How much do you not want to go to dinner with that group of people?
Well, the problem is that the link that was provided on the government's own website to justify its own research is only available by the Wayback Machine.
Yes.
Here we are. Here's the actual link we had to go to through the Wayback Machine, saying understanding public attitudes towards data sharing and government held data. The page itself is a bit broken, but you can still just about access the report which we have here. And I was very much reminded of a bit from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. If you've ever read it, you'll know the bit. He's looking for the notice of when his house was scheduled for demolition. It turns out it was in a on display in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet, stuck in a disused laboratory, with a sign on the door saying "Beware of the Leopard." That's kind of the digital equivalent of this.
Chat sort of half falling apart there. See, Dougal. These cows are very small, but those cows are far away.
It's a lot like that. But yeah, so we've actually had to go through a few. Oh. Again, we're viewing this via the Wayback Machine because the government's own justification for its digital ID framework has basically been scrubbed.
Well, it does say private and confidential on this.
Really?
Well, yeah, look at the top right of the page.
That's kind of funny. So this probably wasn't actually meant for public consumption. There's some really funny bits in here. It talks about the methodology. It talks about general participants.
The diversity of the demographics and the interviewees.
The participants tended not to think about identity verification as a form of data sharing that they participate in regularly. Basically, it's saying that none of these people...
None of these people think in like digital frameworks as how their life
participants
works.
Found it challenging to identify strong positives or concerns about the process. So basically, they didn't say anything relevant. When prompted with specific examples, participants did see some drawbacks to the current process. So you can feel, if you read this document, these people asking these leading questions and then not getting what they're expecting. So they basically tell them what to say.
Yes.
And that is their focus group here.
There's one of the other ones as well. I can't remember exactly what page it's on. That, like, they essentially say to people like, oh, well, you know, what if this was, yeah, there you go, there's that one there. Yeah. Potential improvements for current ID verification. Participants felt the ID verification required excessive information to be given at times, e.g. utility bills, and this process could be simplified, streamlined. There was too much value placed on a passport, and some felt that there needs to be a backup for passports in the event of theft or loss. Now, those seem to me like two very obvious leading questions. If I said to the average person on the street, wouldn't it be nice the next time you had to set up some form of financial instrument like a bank account that you didn't have to take all the things to prove that you're a citizen that works and earns a wage or whatever?
Yeah.
Which, quite frankly, there's a reason why it's difficult.
Yes.
And then latterly, oh, there needs to be a backup for passports. No, the reasons why passports are important is because there isn't a backup for them.
No.
That there is no second passport you take with you to prove that that, you know, it is the, maybe we could maybe think of it as like the common ID denominator.
Yes.
At least as the system stands so far. It doesn't mean we like passports to any great degree. But if you then go and say to someone like, well, what if you had a thing that meant if you lost your passport like a retard, that you could still go on holiday?
The big problem they have with the current system is they don't want digital ID, they're just worried about losing their physical IDs.
Well, also part of this, I think, is the fact that if they can provide, let's assuming all the responses in this report are real, yeah, and are 100% genuine, the words right there, they just say how it's more convenient. If you say to people, this thing's more convenient and it's too hard for the average person to work out what the drawbacks would be in the abstract, of course they're going to be like, well, yeah, sure, whatever. That sounds good.
Well, it also means that you don't have, like, the other side of that is the right to not be forgotten, that there will be permanent documents on you.
Yes.
And you can't ask them to be removed. But anyway, there's an interesting thing, though. Britain Thinks, the think tank, or the polling organisation they hired to do this, has some quite interesting members. It turns out that Britain Thinks is run by Deborah Mattinson and Vicky Cook, and they have also recently hired members of the Nudge Unit, aka the Behavioural Insights teams. They hired somebody called where is that?
It's what's his Max Morby.
Max Morby, who is formerly of the Behavioural Insights team, previously known as the Nudge Unit. But who is Deborah Mattinson, you might say? Well, first of all, Vicky Cook is somebody who is from the Climate Group.
See, they must have not got the memo, though, because yeah, they've not. I looked up some of these people earlier on. All the other staff that work for it now all have Think Insights on their account.
Yeah.
Whereas some of the people that founded it have obviously just not got the memo and still think it's called Britain Thinks.
But she's a normal NGO kind of person. But the Deborah Mattinson is director of, she was campaign manager for Keir Starmer and is director of strategy for Keir Starmer. If you look at her author page here on where she's hawking her books, Deborah Mattinson advised Labour through the 1980s and the birth of New Labour. She then worked closely with Gordon Brown as she prepared to become PM. And after the transition, she began her career in advertising as a founder director of Britain Thinks.
An international arm, World Thinks. So, but they combined that all together into Thinks Insight. Well, Deborah Mattinson is one of the UK's leading pollsters and strategists and founding director of Britain Thinks. Provides clients from the corporate world, voluntary sector and government with insights and strategic advice. Before co-founding Britain Thinks, she jointly ran the Chime Research and Engagement Division, pollster for Gordon Brown, firstly as Chancellor of the Exchequer, then as Prime Minister, highly respected commentator on public opinion, which we know does not exist. There is, yes, no such thing as public opinion. And people like this exist to imbue that myth into your head.
So the polling and the focus group testing that they used to justify the use of digital ID was run by the Nudge Unit and Keir Starmer's campaign manager.
You'll notice as well that there is a little bit of a confluence as well between the Think Insights people and also people from the Tony Blair Institute. They seem to have done a little bit of work on the future of Britain stuff with one another.
This is merely in the beta for the testing phase, they say, and the legislation to justify the next step of it hasn't even been drafted yet. And yet, this is already a pilot scheme. There are already certifications for attribute providers, aka distributed government databases being handed out, and they're being handed out by UCAS, by the UK Accreditation Service. And they've even come up with their own ISO standard and the conformity assessment to really turn this into a, on the surface of it, hands-off process. But if you look at the digital identity framework...
Fourth Industrial Revolution, woo!
Yes, where's that?
Oh, just yeah. To the top page.
God, it's, yeah, it says related topics, Fourth Industrial Revolution. Good Lord. UK Digital Identity and Attributes Trust Framework. Announcement of the pilot program applicant bodies. So there's already these certification bodies handing out these digital ID certifications to companies to become these attributes processors or attributes holders, so the government can play past the database with them. And all of these groups have people in them who are related to the Tory government or people around it in the same way that the COVID scheme did. Mm. I'm not going to go through it all now. Might end up being its own stream at some point, because honestly, it's such a tangled mess. But people are going to make millions from this process. These people here are going to make millions, possibly billions from this.
Oh, I easily.
But the pilot scheme for the whole digital, you know, attributes thing has already been handed out. But here's the next piece of the puzzle. So we have the attributes framework. That is basically just a distributed government database so they can pretend they don't have a database. That is really what the attributes framework is. And it also allows them to hoover up all the information that the private sector already holds, and also give them their blessing as holders of people's private information. It's a kind of a genius scheme, to be honest, if you're extremely evil. But the UK government plans digital identity law change to support one login rollout. Here's what was missing from the .gov verify thing. A lot of you will have been subjected to .gov verify but not realized it. That's what was mentioned in the policy exchange report. That is the previous attempt for them to do this whole distributed government database thing. They are now bringing out one that has legislative footing, which will be the one login rollout. But as we'll learn a bit later, it's already been rolled out without the underpinning legislation to it. There's a bizarre chicken and egg thing here, where all of these things are still in the testing phase, the proposal phase, there's still public consultations going on, and yet it's already been implemented everywhere. It's already been implemented in a huge swathe of government services, both the attributes framework and one login. Do you can just give a quick one to this then?
Yeah, if you want. We'll just scroll down and we'll see what they're saying here.
Yeah.
UK government has opened a consultation on draft legislation to support its new identity verification platform, One Login. As part of the consultation, the Cabinet Office has set out its proposal to enable greater data sharing between specified public authorities.
Yes.
One Login will enable users to sign into government services online with a single login, replacing the 40-plus logins currently required for all services. The Government Digital Service, part of the Cabinet Office, is working with two private sector service providers, Deloitte and
Experian, as in the credit ratings.
And also like the massive, isn't Deloitte like a massive investment bank as well?
Yes, it is.
According to a government announcement, the consultation paper sets out a proposed objective for the draft Digital Government Regulations 2023 to support One Login. It will also allow select public authorities to check and share several types of government-held data with the platform to verify citizen identities. Now, if it isn't clear to you already, One Login will be the one that it'll be the thing you log in to check your tax, because obviously, I mean, it's something we've not covered in a great length, but there's HMRC's Making Tax Digital program.
Yes, of course.
You want to access your bank. You want to access the NHS. You want to access maybe even your private dentist alongside that. And also, it's the same thing people will use to sign into Pornhub.
Yes. Essentially, yes. Well, here's where it interfaces with what we've talked about before. What type of personal data do government departments require for identity verification? Under the Digital Economy Act of 2017, only named public authorities listed in the legislation can possess data to support identity verification services. Those currently include the Home Office, Department of Work and Pensions, HM Revenue and Customs, councils in England, schools, and academies in England and Wales, and police and fire authorities are allowed to share certain types of information. These departments hold personal data about citizens, including full names, date of birth, home addresses, photographic images, passport, blah, 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 identity checks, procedures performed, income and attributes deemed necessary for government departments to verify identities, health, adult social care, are not currently in scope. However, the government departments have come under scrutiny in the past for the use of personal data. The Department of Education was warned by the Information Commissioner in November after it shared data on 28 million children to gambling sites.
I'm sure that's going to go swimmingly then, isn't it?
Government departments and agencies continue to seek private identity, digital identity solutions. Well, that's the attributes framework.
Here's what interests me there.
Yeah.
He says, in the same month, this is Robert Stoneman, Service Director for UK Public Sector at Global Data. The Pensions Dashboard Programme also signals its intent to go to market in the future for its own digital identity service. I'm sorry, but they're going to kill your granny because she's not going to know how to use an iPhone. I mean, that's basically what they're saying there.
Greater data sharing with cryo questions at Whitehall. Basically, what they're proposing here with the one login thing, though, and here's consultation on draft legislation to support identity verification, updated June 23rd, 2023. So they've not even, they're putting out a consultation to draft the legislation. That's how early in the process this whole thing is. But the system is already operating. It's really talking about, you know, additional ways to how my data process, blah, 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 blah. But it really just goes into the fact that the outcome of this, which I think is already draft legislation help, this consultation is closed because it was in January. So the consultation has come to an end. And
now we have people like Natalie Jones, who is, what is it referred to? Dedicated position for digital ID in government, yeah, or something like that.
The one I had on earlier is the consultation outcome, and what they basically say is that we're going to proceed with this. I believe what they said was at the earliest regulatory, UK government, let me quickly make sure I've got that in the right one there. That's not the right link, but in one of these...
it's the one you've closed. You need to reopen that one again.
This one?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And then search in there and you'll find it.
Yes, there it is. Sorry. The UK government intends to take forward legislation as soon as parliamentary time allows. While responses did engage with specific questions, they highlighted the wider potential benefits of the data sharing regulations, including a physical health and well-being. Again, there's a little bit here where they talk about the fact that quite a few people basically just sent in submissions that said stuff you know, digital ID cards.
Mm.
And then they go, no, it's not an ID card, it's not an ID card. But yeah, the UK government intends to take forward legislation as soon as Parliament time allows. I'm not sure I missed it here, but through all of this, they basically say as well that your consent to data sharing, if it is for digital identity verification, is not needed. They're basically saying that GDPR...
means that you've already agreed to this.
Yes. Or that it means that you don't need consent to data sharing.
That's funny, that isn't it? GDPR, something, again, that was done sort of hand in glove with the EU, worked out, what, 2016, 2015? Already has within it all the sort of elements that would be required to have you also agree to a digital identity system.
Yes. The thing is, respondents commented that public bodies should not share the personal data they hold for any purposes without prior consent, consent data from the individual.
Yeah. In relation to identity verification services proposed by the government, the proposed regulations will enable specify public bodies to provide an individual's data, such as driving license information, when it is necessary for them to prove who they are in order to access a government service. Only the minimum number of data checks will be used to verify who a person is.
Yes.
Proving who you are online will not be compulsory. Instead, people will have more choice as to how they prove things about themselves. Which to me is instantly a suggestion that large parts of the internet will be a walled garden for people who put forward certain amounts of information.
Yes.
The lawful basis for processing, i.e. sharing personal data, will be determined by the responsible data controllers, but for public services this would be typically be that it will be necessary for the performance of a task carried out in the public interest or in the exercise of official authority under GDPR.
Yeah.
There we go.
And Section 35 of the Digital Economies Act provides a legal underpinning for relaying on the basis where the data is being shared to achieve a specific. Basically, they're saying that you don't need to give them consent, is what they're saying in there.
We're already so far down the line here that we have a director of digital identity. But the bait and switch to me here is that they're saying this, they're talking about this as if, you know, one login, it's all these new things. But then they say here, Natalie's been in the civil service for 15 years, where she led the digital delivery of the EU settlement scheme. Now, clearly to me, that reads like they're using the extra legal status of migrants as a way to prototype all this stuff before they apply it to people, which... And I will say this now, that will be the trend for UBI, and that will be the trend for housing provisions.
Well, as we learnt previously, one of the provisions of them repealing the Identity Cards Act was them abolishing the office of the, what is it, the ID Commissioner, basically. The Identity Commissioner. And now they have their own Digital Identity Commissioner. It's kind of hilarious that the government that is performatively saying that there will be no ID cards and there will be no requirement of digital ID has resurrected, in a roundabout way, one of the offices that they made a big song and dance about abolishing about a decade ago. But anyway, here it is. Government Digital Service. Gov UK One Login June 2023 update. Shipping the product, basically. We now have 8 services using .gov One Login. Remember, they're still drafting the legislation for this. So this is the new Digital ID Commissioner talking about the fact that there's already 8 services used in the One Login service. And I believe they have just done this as a switchover. These were the 8 services that were already integrated into the .gov Verify framework that completely fell on its arse and failed and was regarded as a very expensive waste of time, as we'll see in a little bit. But yeah, we already have Disclosure and Barring Service, Department of Business and Trade, DBLA, Social Work England, HM Revenue and Customs, HM Land Registry, Ofqual, and the Modern Slavery Unit.
Yeah, that was one I think that might come up again that I mentioned somewhere else. But, you know, there's another Cameronite Centre for Social Justice creation that was the Modern Slavery Act, which allows people to use digital frameworks to check on people's status of housing and work and this, that, and the next thing, which was prototyped years before they were going to do any of this stuff.
Well, again, here's another press release. Gov UK One Login, 1.5 million people already benefiting from the reform of government services online. The new universal login is making public services easier to access online for more than 1.5 million people. System allows you to have just one account, one username, one password, and one identity check to use government services. So again, they're boasting about it here, how 1.5 people are already using it, whilst the legislation to make it effectively legal is still in the public consultation stage for a white paper. It's, again, a lot of this is things that you're told are in progress, are years away, are decades away. And yet we already have a unified system based on greater data sharing that will be enabled by a new law to have even greater data sharing, which will de facto create the government database.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the sort of latter point here. The fig leaf that physical services will still be accessible by those not wanting to do so digitally is a farce laid bare by the current impossibility of accessing those services in person already. And the long waiting lists, even for the digital ones like the DVLA. After the backlog caused by the remote working during the lockdowns, which itself demonstrates the state of exception in which these physical services will be cut off entirely.
Yes. Let me quickly see if I can find where I got this quote from, because I'm not quite sure which one it came from. It might be in a different article. I'm not quite sure where I found that quote. But the quote is that one login is not used for the purposes other than verifying someone's identity to allow legitimate identity access. Consent is not required from citizens for these purposes. End quote. Government forum. Government officially shuts down beleaguered Verify ID service. Is that the one here? No, I've skipped a bit ahead there. That's my fault. My apologies. But 1.5 million people are already using it. And yes, it is already been implemented. The question would be then, if it has already been implemented and they've already shut down the thing it's supposed to replace, then what is the legislation needed for? What will it contain and how will it be used? Because it seems like they've already got what they wanted and they're simply using it to ask for more. Zoom out again here, because apparently no website can display in a consistent fashion in the 21st century. I believe this is where I might have got the quote from. No, it isn't. That quote is now homeless, but it was written somewhere in an official document.
It already said elsewhere that the notion that what you're doing with all this one login stuff and digital ID and attributes and trust framework, you already agreed to it via GDPR.
Yes. Well, a big thing is, though, is that all of this has been tried before. As we talked about with the .gov Verify, it was an expensive failure, with each department and agency trying to retain its own system and jostle for digital ID leadership. The issue isn't skepticism within government. The issue is too many cooks. The departments have already been doing this ad hoc, enthusiastically for years, with almost no oversight, bar what is the boilerplate line about GDPR. Again, we have the headline here from Global Government Forum saying UK government officially shuts down beleaguered Verify ID service. It goes on to talk about the fact that it would amend the Digital Economy Act. One login is currently being piloted, with departments having put in place an adoption strategy and roadmap. The aim is for all departments to be using one login by 2025. Again, the pilot's happening before the legislation to enable the pilot has been... It's all very backwards, but really what they're doing is they're trying to catch up. There's been a huge sprint in the past 2 years to bring forward a digital ID system, because their previous efforts, and the only thing that has slowed them down, has been their own incompetence. Here we see again, will Gov UK one login become an expensive failure like Verify? The new single digital identity system for government has been hailed by ministers. Experts are less optimistic about its potential. What they don't see, though, is the interlock with the attributes framework. They don't see, really, that a lot of stuff has been put in underneath this when it comes to the quote-unquote private sector.
Is it that they don't see, or is it they are not saying?
Yeah. But there is still quite a lot of skepticism about the delivery of this. Citizens do not want greater data sharing between departments. Which is a huge thing. Again, 89% disagreed or strongly disagreed that the Cabinet Office, Department for Transport, Department for blah, 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 should be able to share data or improve targeted public services under specific objectives. So once again, this is incredibly unpopular. A lot of the independent consultation polls that come out of it have said that the government just wants to push this through, and the people in quotes, or at least the people who've been asked, are saying, we don't want this, stuff yours.
No.
In fact, like I said, the exasperation from them earlier about being told to stuff themselves is very obvious. Thank you for the $5 there, use the eunuch. Law is downstream power. Power has already put in place what it wants. The law enshrines their actions into the new order of society. Yes, essentially, digital ID has been implemented kind of just wholesale without people understanding it. There is already probably a back-end profile of you out there via data sharing and via gathering attributes from the private sector that adds up to a digital ID. It just hasn't been front-ended yet.
No.
It is a back-end without a front-end. That's what we'll be seeing more here. UK's one login still has competition in government. Again, there's a lot of departments who are trying to be the digital ID people. And the one thing that really has slowed this down is their own infighting and incompetence. But we can't rely on that forever, because it looks like one login might actually stick.
Yes.
They certainly have the oomph behind it. And this really all reminded me of the fact that the government does not have the resources to develop these systems in-house. But no one seems to be able to point to, apart from vague partnerships with Expedia and
Delawite or whatever.
Yeah, Delawite. Who is actually involved in the frontlining of the system? Who is actually developing the digital ID? Because they don't have the resources in-house.
There appears to be, and we'll get to one of the examples later on, certain groups that are working with one or another branch that is semi-related to the government. Like, there are one group of people working with the Bank of England.
Yeah.
But no one is, you know, they haven't picked a winner per se yet for who is going to be the provider of digital identity.
No, and no one seems to quite know who it is. In fact, it reminds me of the NHS Test and Trace program and its relationship or lack of relationship in some people's opinions or assertions to Serco, because there was a huge amount of will they, won't they. You know, 37 billion got attributed to being sent on Serco. And, well, the vast majority of NHS Test and Trace is just testing. It turns out Serco was being paid, but it was being paid for contact. It was a whole controversy, but really months and months of political energy and wrangling were spent trying to figure out if Serco was involved in Test and Trace and the COVID passports. And we got very muddled answers of, well, maybe. And that's what this reminds me of. And again, the digital ID stuff is really, really supercharged by the lockdowns. It is, I don't have time again to go into all the stuff that happened during the lockdowns in terms of creating a digital ID framework. But much like Blair's original national ID framework, it suggested that the number of identity providers will be operation. Sorry. That doesn't make any sense.
It suggests that a number of identity providers will be operational. This, we presume, creates a greater illusion of choice and helps to manufacture consent, because you can go for your preferred trusted identity provider.
Yeah.
As opposed to, here's the digital ID, here's you taking it. However, I think that these people are slippery enough to suggest that if you have to use a digital ID, that's different from a mandatory digital ID.
Yeah.
Because, well, you can choose the one from Barclays, or you can choose the one from this group, or you can choose the one from that group. Therefore, it's not the mandatory one. It's just mandatory that you use at least one of them.
Well, I want to cycle back to all the way back in 2002. David Blunkett and the UK government, despite opposing them in 1997, proposed the introduction of compulsory ID cards. Partially predicated on the idea of border security, and partially predicated on the idea of being more in alignment with the EU. There is a very large history of this being predicated on fully digital ID checks to prevent identity fraud in terms of migration. And this is how it's being predicated here. The first people to use the attributes framework in earnest.
Oh, God. This is so far back that it features Nicolas Sarkozy.
Yes.
Oh, my.
But
yes, there has always been a tie-in between the movements of people and the creation of digital identity. I mean, here's another one. Digital identity checking for landlords and employers to tackle immigration abuse. Again, this is essentially sort of a policy black hole that the Slavery Act, a modern Slavery Act of 2015, left open. Because it said, well, some sort of social care body has to check for the welfare of these people and make sure that they're not slaves. Well, how do you do that? How do you do these checks en masse? Of course, after long enough, the answer becomes digital ID.
Well, again, this is something that was implemented in January 2022, that they are already using the identification document validation technology, the IDVT, which hasn't been mentioned upon now. Because basically, they kind of made it up. Really, the IDVT is just the UK Digital Identity Attribute Framework, but it is the government utilising the framework itself.
Yes.
And that really is the bundling up here.
Yeah. The government isn't going to use any of this stuff, except from when the Home Office prototypes using it against migrants, because no one's going to bother to mention it or take an issue with it.
Yeah, the IDSPs allow people to identify, to verify their identity remotely and prove their eligibility to work or rent. Again, this was predicated on the lockdowns causing a breakdown of services.
Yeah, I mean, I fully expect this to be priming for a future discussion on how migration must be safe, legal, and digital.
Yes. Well, the whole thing is that really, again, here we have a smoking gun of a digital ID service that is being used for fully digital checks with what must be fully digital ID information.
And as you've got here as well, they are already doing biometric stuff for this with the Trust ID framework.
Yes. Well, there's, like I said,
there you go. Identity document validation technology from a certified identity service provider, you know, there's all the languages are already there and all this stuff already exists. Again, they're just prototyping on migrants.
Well, let me reopen this quick because there's a little bit in here I think I want to talk about. It. Again, it is, this review is now concluded and the updates set out the key outcomes. But in a sense, before the reviews were taking place for the other stuff, before the stuff was published, it was already implemented in these checks and in the right to work checks. And they used it, again, as a drum to beat because they know that migrant bashing, or at least appearing to migrant bashing, appearing to be strong on fake immigration.
This will provide a secure...
It's very popular.
Yeah. This will provide a secure underpinning of robust rules for providers to meet, test the real-world implementation of the trust framework during the beta phase of testing, and ensure providers are on track to meet the rules of the future multi-use case state for digital identity solutions.
But really, the only person who can verify that you have the right to live and work in the UK is the Home Office.
Yep.
So all of this is the shell game. They don't hold the data in quotes, but they are the ones who ultimately are responsible for verifying the checks. So the whole thing falls down. The government passes information to a third party, who then passes it back to another third party, but it's all just an extra step. Again, service providers to carry out digital ID checks for right to rent on British and Irish citizens. That's where I might have got this quote from, sorry. The Home Office has invited private sector digital identity checking service providers to apply for approval to deliver right to rent ID checks for those who cannot currently use Home Office online services, including British and Irish citizens. So really what they're saying is, look, we're farming this out. You won't see a government front end. You'll see hundreds of front ends that come from the same place. It's a great way to create a fake marketplace and tell you that all of this is coming from the private sector when it isn't.
Well, the thing as well with this, and it's a point that will come up later as we close, which will hopefully be soon because there's still quite a bit to go, they are making so much of this farcical.
Yeah.
And they're making it deliberately farcical, I believe, because at the end of all this, they're going to roll out all these different elements of legislation, be it the online safety bill and the attributes framework and a million and six other things that means you've got to comply with the big data society. However, there will not be one sole identity provider that actually works. And what will happen is people across the country will wake up one day and they can't access their benefits, they can't access their bank account, they can't access their housing benefit or prove their right to rent or whatever is required. And we'll essentially turn around to the government and beg them to implement a digital identity framework that actually works. Which, of course, the government will turn around the next day and go, well, that's all right, because we had this one all along.
Yes. Well, the whole thing is that in order to be an accredited provider, you have to meet the UCAS and the Digital Identity Attributes Trust Framework. That's it. But really, your master is the government.
Mm.
They hold all the cards. They really hold all the ID, and they're handing it to you as a way to pretend that you are not part of a giant database. And again, things like Trust ID are already partnered. It's already down here that these people have this new ISO, you know, 27001 certification, which means that they are effectively an arm of the government's digital security state.
I mean, this stuff's been around so long. I can remember about 3 or 4 years ago applying for jobs at Tesco where they have these specific websites that you use to verify your passport with them. So, you know, it's not even that this stuff's been around for a couple of years. Some of this has been around for more than half a decade.
Yep, here's just the Trust Framework certification from the Department of Digital Culture and Medium Sport itself. And then you go to the UCAS thing to make sure that you meet the standards. That's kind of it. And poof, you're a government database who checks identity.
Hmm.
Whoosh, whoosh, wink, wink, nod, nod, you're in the private sector, so it doesn't count. And here's the UCAS verification portal we talked about earlier, where all the companies are listed that will be making bank from being the first people to do this.
You've got a little note here as well, and this is something we'll talk about in the future. Yeah. The new National Security Bill already talks about automatic retention of biometric data by security services like GCHQ.
We talked about this earlier. This is just the government page about biometric residence permits, which really are kind of a biometric digital ID pilot scheme. They have been allowed to do that, I think, because this initially happened under the EU.
Yes.
But they snuck that one in. So, yes, biometric residence permits already exist. So The attributes framework's already been implemented. There's already people certified to do it.
The Home Office is already giving out digitally stored citizenship permits that carry and can be verified using biometric information that is stored somewhere.
They've tried to loosen data sharing between government departments to create a de facto citizen database for years, and now it looks like they might have legislative backing to do it if they pass a new bill that will amend the Digital Economies Act. I mean, people laughed at the Digital Economies Act because it was the one that had the infamous porn ban.
Mm.
But as we'll see later down, as we'll discuss in our conclusions, that really was a problem looking for a solution. And yes, all of this is a problem looking for a solution. The solutions really have already been implemented around the edges. They will simply just be brought into your everyday life.
And of course, a large part of this has been wholly rolled up with Bitcoin.
Digital currency. Well, I will say we are on like a permanent glow watch here. But this is also just peak New Britain is Bitcoin.
But if we scroll down here, I think there's some telling statements elsewhere in this article.
So yeah, it could be used for age checks and nationalities, which is just, again. Yeah.
Alistair Johnson, founder of Nuggets, which we'll get to in a moment, said that consumers could choose to share personal data with a shop when they buy certain items, such as to speed up age checks on cigarettes and alcohol. Mr. Johnson, whose business is working for the Bank of England on a possible ID verification for the system, said that the project could be more private than holding a bank account where information is stored on servers that could be theoretically hacked. Go on.
Yep.
Mr. Johnson said the principle is that the Bank of England wants to have no personable, identifiable information on their side. The biggest element is for privacy, because there is a lot of concern about identity, correlation and tracking. Even though we provide the decentralized identity, we as Nuggets have no access to see anyone's data at any point because the Home Office will have it all anyway.
Yes, basically. But they're trying to create this layer of basically security or privacy from their point of view. But I don't think that this will last. I think that they will just be folded into the attributes framework and folded into the one login thing.
Yeah.
Again, Bank of England taps self-sovereign ID platform Nuggets to develop a privacy-aligned digital pound. They talk about the fact that really it's just a huge tracking risk.
Yes.
A digital pound is just a way to track everyone's purchases and lock out dissidents.
I think of the language as well of digital sovereignty, self-sovereign online identity. That is words directly out of like the World Economic Forum pamphlets.
Yes, it is.
They've had these massive...
The UCAS page mentions the fourth industrial revolution stuff. It's very transparent.
It's throughout all of this stuff, but I just think the notion of digital sovereignty is all just like a massive dangerous spook.
Again, apologies that this stuff has been quite dense and boring. We'll try and wrap it up at the end because there's a lot of threads here that need to be brought together. But here's Nuggets themselves. They seem to be a provider and they seem to be working with the Bank of England. But if you go down to the bottom, once again, you see the fact that they are, I think they are one of the only places I've seen both of these together, which is the ISO 7001, which is basically the UCAS certification and also the Digital Identity Attributes Framework certification. So these guys have been fully brought into this framework. They are implementing everything we've just talked about here in conjunction with the Bank of England to create a digital ID system that will be interoperable with a digital currency.
Yes.
That exists. That is here. The framework for it exists. The legal framework for it exists. It's already here. These two little notices show you it is already here. We aren't doing hyperbole with that title. We've shown you, I think, four examples now of how digital ID is already here, is already being implemented, and the legal framework for it, crucially, already exists.
Yes.
They've ironed out a lot of the liability stuff.
So does the legal precedent for it being a system that can be relied on in law, because they've already used it in so many elements of like immigration law.
Well, there's the reason you're not hearing about this, and one, the details of it are confusing and boring.
Which is probably why the stream has been a little bit scattered, but we've tried our best to make this all coherent.
This is the best logical order it goes in.
Yes.
I am mildly confused by a lot of this, although I've managed to get quite a lot of it around it in my head. But the problem is, like I said, it is not one thing. It is a confluence of policies. And the issue here is that we have a large amount of conspiracy jacketing as well. When people talk about compulsory digital ID cards, again, they are falling into a rhetorical trap. Again, Andrew Brigden, Wonk in Chief, Kook in Chief, who has been used to basically discredit a lot of ideas through his public profile. I'm sorry, but that's just all he comes down to. Brigden calls the debate on any plans. This is back in March. He wasn't removed as a minister then, but he was shortly after. Debate on any plans to introduce digital IDs.
But he's too late, because the digital identity and attributes and trust framework was already passed and going through the House of Lords.
Yeah.
So this is him, you know, never mind, you know, bolting the gate shut after the horses have gone. You know, the barn's bloody burnt down. He's trying to throw buckets of water on it. It's like this... He's so far gone.
Well, that's the point, in that the debate for this is supposed to have only just started.
Well, what's the phrase we like to use?
Yeah.
It's not revelation, it's normalization.
Yes.
What you have on one end is Tony Blair and all these mates for 15, nearly 20 years going, time and time again, there will be digital ID, there will be digital ID, there will be digital ID. And now the people that are opposed to the program are now all saying the same thing. There will be digital ID, there will be digital ID. Yes. At which point, both sides of the debate have agreed that there will be digital ID, so they're going to bring it in.
Some of the reporting as well from Scotland has been that Scotland's rolling out its own digital ID platform, which is not true. No. They are simply plugging into this platform, and it has already happened. The idea that they'll be implementing stuff next year isn't true. They'd already implemented it by this time. So the reporting on it is confusing, behind, and gives a false impression of the state of the debate and the state of the implementation. Again, there's an article here from the Daily Mail. Stephen Glover, Tony Blair's terrifying a liberal plan for digital ID cards makes me more glad than ever he's no longer in power. February 2023. But once again, even before this article was ever published, the back-end framework and the legal wrangling about digital ID and standardized de facto ID cards for each citizen in terms of them being sat in a database had already happened. They're talking about Tony Blair and William Hague, and all of this keeps coming back up, and all of this keeps coming from, you know, the WEF and the Blair Institute and all that. And it keeps being pointed, oh, these guys are kooks. They, you know, thank God this will never happen. But it already has. It's already happened in a roundabout way. And what will happen is all of this will be tied together in a more simplistic way to make it more efficient. Again, the international news, not doing too much international stuff in terms of the news here, but... ABC Australia News, minor parties spread Big Brother fears as they ramp up campaign against proposed digital ID laws. But again, in Australia and the EU, a lot of these laws have already been passed. So where does this leave us, really? It's I don't mean to leave people hopeless, but we need to know what stage we are at here. And I don't know, I've written up a few conclusions here, but tell you what. I'll make a quick start. I know you have a few things you want to read as well.
Yeah,
so.
If you want to do the first two, I'll do the other two.
We've talked before about the digital ID-shaped hole in most of UK law when it comes to online services, security, and immigration. This is an intentional hole and goes as far back as the much-laughed-at porn ban in the Digital Economy Act of 2017, and was only made stronger by the Online Safety Bill. We talked about that in our video. Mandatory digital ID will be a requirement for access to online services, because the provisions of these bills and many others do not make it a choice. They do not function without it. It is not a single bill, but a confluence of bills, policies, and secondary legislation that provides us with a full picture of the scope of digital ID. We will soon have, and in many ways, is already here. and I'll just add to that as well that the stuff that we're seeing in the confluence of bills and the fact that it will be de facto mandatory rather than de jure mandatory is a huge part of the process.
Yes.
They will never make it mandatory in quotes on paper. What little accessible research we have says that there is no public demand for digital ID services. The demand is predicated on the focus group Britain Thinks, which is staffed by the government itself, the Nudge Unit, and the Labour Party. And Policy Exchange put forward a document justifying this, but as we know, that is just the Tory Party pure and simple, it's just authoritarian. So the government seems exasperated by the responses to its public consultations, with the majority simply telling them they do not want digital ID.
The schemes are a direct contravention of the spirit of the Identity Documents Act 2010, which went as far as to close the office of the Identity Commissioner as a core provision. But now we have a Director of Digital Identity as part of a Digital ID Commission, and the implementation of a formalised central database via information sharing, the most hated part of the Identity Cards Act.
Yeah.
There has been a deliberate effort by all managerialists at the policy-making end to ensure that loose digital ID solved ends are existent in all policy. They will implement all of the above, possibly without a functioning digital ID, to hold it together, so that the public demands it in the near future. The Conservatives have gone 99% of the way with a convoluted system. Labour will simply make it sane and simple with a proper database and digital ID wallet that I genuinely believe, if they basically roll all these things out, there will be people begging for it.
Yes.
Because they'll be like, well, you've rolled out this element of, you know, the one login thing, but the one login doesn't work with the database at the private company I work for. So actually what you need to do is roll out some form of one-size-fits-all digital identity framework that the government will stand behind and back.
Yep, basically, exactly. Well, I don't think we have much else to go through, but that is the ways, one, it has been implemented, and two, it will simply be expanded into all the legislation we've talked about before. There's a lot of digital ID stuff scattered throughout kind of the history of our streams. So if we're going to go back and look at some of those, it is, I think, mentioned directly in the Online Safety Bill stream and our Political Switcheroo stream. I might link those in the notes. And by the way, if you're watching the VOD, I do put the notes as the pinned comment. I've got better at doing that. Just to go through a little bit of our shilling again, as we always do, please do visit the Substack. We will be putting up stuff there at least once a week, possibly even twice a week. And you can support us through it as well by becoming a paid subscriber. As we mentioned earlier, the link down below and pinned in the chat to the Ko-fi if you want to send us some stuff to keep this show going.
That would be appreciated.
There is a large amount of research here.
Yes.
To sum up quickly, you have the Attributes Framework, which is a roundabout database for all of your personal data, as well as acting as data harvesting from the private sector. You have the one login service, which is predicated on using the Attributes Framework, which is the government itself hoovering all of this up into its own structure. And that is a real big nod that they have a joined up system that will allow mass data sharing as backed by a change in law that they are proposing. And as we described previously, large amounts of this have already been implemented through all of these frameworks, through the Home Office, through checks for housing, through a lot of different pilot schemes in quotes and certification schemes. This is happening and has already happened. So when someone tells you, you know, prevent digital ID, it's really repeal digital ID, because, well, we are already here.
I will just put my hand up and say, anyone that tells you on some form of dissident or right-wing platform that you must resist or in some way can resist digital ID is either in on it and is playing an important part in consent manufacturing by showing that there is some level of protest against this.
Yes.
Or they are a complete fucking idiot. Right. And they've just not read government documents that have been sitting there for the last 2 or 3 years that we've shouted from the hilltops about and people have just bothered to ignore. So...
yeah, yes. that's the issue, is that we have tried to get this discussion going and found very little uptake of it, no. Bizarrely. But it's not really a told you so, but the Attributes Framework, it was very clear when it was published 2 years ago, this is important. We are now seeing why it was important and how quickly you can go from theoretical talk to full implementation even before the process on paper has finished. It's I've not seen something like this for quite a while. In fact, this is almost a dog days of Blair government level stuff, in that they're implementing it before there's a legal framework.
Well, yeah, that was something you suggested earlier on. It's not something to continue the conversation anymore. But just think on this last final point. How often is it that an unpopular government very clearly on its way out, implements legislation that the next government wanted to put in anyway. But said incoming government no longer has to accrue the negative capital of the policy being there because the people before it did us, and it would be political and evil to repeal the legislation that democratically was voted for in.
There's nothing more dangerous than a government that has nothing democratically to lose. You see the baked agendas of the elites who make it up in that situation, and usually you just leads to large-scale implementation of projects that are unpopular with the populace, but are very, very much desired by the elite class. And that really is how the sausage gets made, and that people who've already committed some form of political suicide, like William Hague seems to have done, are used as the people you blame for a system coming in, and then the governments after it go, this is too complex to untangle, we'll just have to live with it.
Yep.
And that's how the political consent is manufactured. Anyway, thank you guys for watching, and we will see you on Wednesday. Good night.
No, we won't.
Oh shit! No, we
won't.
You're
away on Wednesday.
Well, yes, but there'll be a video from me on Wednesday. Sorry. So yes,
yes.
You'll hear me on Wednesday, but I'll be uploading a more of a detailed guide to the channel, and I'll be doing a few more playlists as well. Some people have requested those. They don't get used very often, but it allows people to conduct research using our work a bit more easily. So I will be implementing some playlists and some suggested reading and viewing. So thank you, guys, and have a good night.
Good night.